Headlines.
From Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. On the right, I am Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan.
And on the left, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
You're listening to the most disruptive radio show in America. It's time for Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. It's a big Friday show for you today, and in round one, charges have been dropped against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, and a guilty plea is being recorded for disgraced former congressman and Democrat Anthony Weiner. Both face sexual charges, but is there a double standard? Then in round two, Donald Trump is embarking on his first foreign trip, and he may be ready to back what's being called by some a Muslim NATO. Is this any way to sell an arms deal? And in round three, the numbers are in and immigration enforcement is up. But is Trump's new get tough policy on immigration going to last? And how will it impact the economy? All of that and more today on this episode of Fault Lines with Nixon Stranahan. Hey, Garland, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic here, ready to go. I'm happy. I would hope that Assange could be freed, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen, but it gives us plenty to talk about.
Well, like Donald Trump, I'm sure, is saying, we made it through another week. I mean that could be that could be what Donald Trump is thinking to himself right now, is like, oh, look, I'm still here, and I'm going away for a trip.
Maybe he narrowed it down to an hour by now. I made it through another hour. A week's a long time, but that's a big block of time for Donald Trump, the way things have been going the last week for him.
Yeah, I was going to say. Now, we have a lot to talk about here. So let's start with this thing that I didn't expect to be coming today. I didn't know it was happening. I didn't know either one of these were happening, was the stuff with Assange and Weiner. The Weiner story in particular is something that I know quite a bit about personally, only because I worked like 6 years ago with my friend Andrew Breitbart when the first Anthony Weiner story broke. But let's talk about this Assange thing, and let's talk about the double standard. And eventually we'll get to why the Democrats love their horrible anti-woman Democrats, why they lionize people like Clinton, like Kennedy, like John Edwards, like Anthony Weiner for a long time. Let's come to that. But let's talk about the Assange thing first. Now, again, I've told you my theory before. This is my WikiLeaks theory. And that applies to Assange. When WikiLeaks goes after people I don't like, I like them. But when they go after people I do like, I like them less. That's my theory on WikiLeaks, and I think it applies to most people. And so it is with Julian Assange. For instance, I didn't think the Bradley Manning stuff was cool, right? That concerned me because it seemed to be putting U.S. troops in danger. And I was critical of that. Now, on the other hand, I got to say, I love the Hillary Clinton leaks were awesome. The Democrat leaks were awesome. Those were fantastic. Now, what I've said, the way I've resolved this internal contradiction is whatever I think of Assange or whatever I think of WikiLeaks, I think that sort of thing is here to stay. So I will say that especially when the Bradley Manning stuff was going on, I personally did not have as huge a problem with Sweden going after Assange on these sexual charges. I thought, okay. I looked into him a little bit, and I'm like, well, you know, it doesn't seem cool, right? And I noticed this with, I'm going to be honest, I noticed this with a lot of people who were broadly conservatives on the right as well. When that was happening with Assange, initially, they were like, well, that's not cool. I hope they bust him. Then when the WikiLeaks started with the DNC, they were like, well, I don't know. Maybe we should give Assange a second look, right? So I don't know how I feel about it. You know, there's stories that the women, for instance, have recanted some of the stuff they said about him. But let me ask this, though. Let me bring up a question I think is more provocative, Garland. Where does Assange go from here?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I think he brought that up today. And I think this is important to me. This is an important part of the conversation that he brought up today, because one of the things that he talked about was, you know, and I would recommend that anyone takes their time to go look at the original case. I mean, here's a man who he goes to Sweden. He's invited by this woman, invited to stay at her house, invited to sleep in her bed, stays with her for a week. He gets introduced to another woman. He's invited to her house, sleeps in her bed, stays with her. You know, both of these women invite him to his house, stays with, you know, and he stays in their bed, goes to dinner with him every day. And then afterwards, there's an accusation. Yeah, there's,
well, wait, but keep,
I'm not standing right or wrong.
Keep going with the accusation, though, because don't trail off there. Don't dot out there, because this is a big deal. Because, look, if you're
well, one of the women claimed that he wouldn't use a condom. If you read,
that's not quite what she claimed. What she claimed is he didn't use a condom. And by the way, what is that? Does that rise to the level of rape? Exactly. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not cool. And that he sort of forced himself on her after she said, I don't want you to do it without a condom on. Now, but so don't trail off. I'm saying the accusation and even the part, here's the thing. Well, let me ask you, this is a lot matter of law. As a matter of law enforcement, can you rape your wife?
Yeah, you can. No.
Okay, right. That's my point. I agree with you, by the way.
All I'm saying is here, there's a number of things here, not the least of which being, so there was an accusation made similar to what you said, right? Okay. And I'm not defending it or prosecuting it, saying it's right or wrong, and that I know anything, you know, with it. But the fact of the matter is, so this happened and he continued to stay at her house and they continued to have sex again. You know what I mean? And this continued to go voluntary, you know, consensual sex again. All I'm saying is that, you know, there are a lot of things there that would make you question, you know, that sexual assault. That being said, whatever the case, Sweden's not moving forward with the case. And we get to where we are now. And this is important, something that Assange said today. He launched what I consider a very reasonable attack on globalism.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, it was.
You pointed that out when we were watching.
Here's what he said, basically, that, okay, Sweden wanted me to be extradited from England. I'm in England. They want to be extradited. And under English law, under British law, they couldn't do it. However, what they said is, under EU rules, under the European Union rules, even though I haven't been charged with a crime, in England, you can't ask for extradition of somebody who has not been charged with a crime. They were looking into it. And so he said, I haven't been charged with a crime. Under British rules, they can. However, under EU rules, they can do it. So the problem, again, it's something that Lee and I talk about. Under globalism, what happens is they create these entities such as the EU or the Trans-Pacific Partnership or some other trade deal. And they tell us it's in our best interest and it'll bring us jobs and things of that nature, which never really happens. But then, as we see here now, when they can't, within the confines of the democracy of England, of Great Britain, where they decided, the people chose the members of parliament, and the members of parliament decided upon the law, and they decided that the law was they couldn't extradite a person. They couldn't extradite a person who hasn't been charged with a crime. Now you can go outside to these globalist groups. And now, because let's face it, in my opinion, a lot of people's opinion, they're going after Assange because Assange is a threat to the establishment worldwide. And because he's putting forth a lot of information that the establishment doesn't want us, that the established powers don't want us to know. I think that's his biggest crime, is he is a threat to the established powers. He's a threat to the corporate and government powers that don't want the average individual working class person to know. They're going after this guy. People like me believe it. And I think that the point he made was, see, here's the EU being used to go around, to do an end around law, and that's an issue. And I believe that's an issue. And I believe that's what happens all the time.
Well, and Assange said the war has just begun. I mean, the big quote coming out of this right now is Assange said the war has just begun. In other words, he's not slowing down on this, which is, again, look, I got to say this. You know, here's one. I talked about this morning on a Periscope that I do, Garland.
Mm-hmm.
I no longer feel part of the right. Let me explain. I think that these left-right labels, I'm still opposed to the left, but what I consider myself at this point is a small government populist, as opposed to a big, I consider a big government populist, for instance, right? But he's still in the same broad tradition. And so I got to say that as a populist, as an anti-elitist, the stuff that Assange is doing is very important, because the elites have been protected by their anonymity and secrecy for, let me, I'm not great at math.
Ever?
Yeah, ever. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. That's the number I was looking for. Yeah. I was just trying to add up infinity, beginning of time. There you go. So as a small government populist, but see, here's what I think is interesting about the argument you're making about whether it was a sexual assault or not, whether you know it or not.
I don't know. You know, I'm not ready to take a position on that, Lee. I'm just saying as much as
But you're making the argument that a lot of conservatives, frankly, make that some of the laws about rape and the enforcement of those laws have simply gone too far, where there is such a thing as rape and it's bad and everyone knows that. But there's also such a thing as false accusations of rape, and they seem to be used for political purposes. And I'm thinking about the UVA case, which is completely made up. I'm thinking about the Duke University lacrosse case, where these things happen. I'm thinking about the Steubenville case that I was part of, that's a more complex story. But where these accusations of rape for what was, it's like I say, in some cases,
nothing. In some cases, nothing ever happened.
In some cases, nothing at all. Are disturbing, but let's turn to.
Well, there's one other thing that I think it's one last thing I have to say. I think it's important because he talked about the U.S. wanting to go after him for putting out information on the internet. You know, that was classified information, and he made a very powerful point, and that is, the U.S. says we're going to go after you because you put this stuff on the information out. But and this is an important point that he made. But he's not in the U.S. He doesn't operate in the U.S. He's never operated in the U.S. He doesn't have operations in the U.S. So can the United States now say the Australian Melbourne Times put something out? Can we now say the Antarctic Gazette put something out? If we're going to go after him and go after people in other countries, now keep in mind, he's not the one, whether it was Manning, whether you agree with Manning or not, or whether it was Snowden, he's not the one who got the information. Someone sends him the information. The question is, if we go after him for putting out this information, for publicizing it, can we now just go around the world anytime somebody puts out something we don't like or something we consider classified information? I think journalists like us, or who are kind of outside of the normal, outside of the pale, have to be concerned and have to somewhat feel an ally with Assange, because we're people that believe, look, if you get information, you've done investigative journalism. If somebody comes to you and says, Lee, man, I got some good stuff, well, you should not have to worry about going to jail.
It was an active concern of mine.
Guccifer,
too.
You shouldn't have to worry
about going to jail. Guccifer, too, who's the entity who people believe is behind the,
right,
the DNC hack, Guccifer, too, gave me material. I was in communication with Guccifer, too. I'll be honest with you. I was a little worried about it, and Breitbart was so worried about it that they didn't publish it.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, well, we're not going to publish it. Now, speaking of Breitbart, we're coming up on Memorial Day weekend, and 6 years ago, Memorial Day weekend, I spent it on the phone with Andrew Breitbart because Anthony Weiner had sent a young woman in Washington State, not his wife, a college student, a picture of his bulging underwear. Now, we covered that story. Andrew was supposed to be on vacation.
Because he didn't cover the story.
Well, he did. He covered it, but it was covered up enough. But he accidentally sent a tweet of that publicly that was supposed to be sent privately. And Andrew had me working with him on that story and communicating with people. Now, the interesting thing about that first Weiner story that the media buried, and I'm not going to make you defend Anthony Weiner, Garland, because that wouldn't be fair.
And I wouldn't do it.
I am going to make you defend all Democrats, though. That's what I'm going to do, because that's a little more fair.
Okay.
Anthony Weiner, at the end of that story, had been talking to, and the media semi-buried it. You can find it. But in that first Weiner scandal, that the Democrats are kind of like, well, whatever. He was talking to a 17-year-old girl in Delaware. And I knew about it, and I know her name, and I knew all about it. There was no reason for that guy to be talking to a 17-year-old girl. None. Privately. And when the police came and took their computer, lo and behold, I know it'll be shocking to you, Garland, but the messages were all gone. And so what I'm saying is the media and the left gave Anthony Weiner a pass. It took, if you saw this Anthony Weiner documentary, it took this case where he sent obscene pictures to a 15-year-old. before people were like, well, maybe this is something we should do something about. And now he's pled guilty and he's going to go up the river. So let me just give you examples of heinous people who are given passes. Let's start with Ted Kennedy, who left a woman to die in Chappaquiddick. Mary Jo Kopechne was a horrible story if you read about the details. Bill Clinton, who used an intern, the lowest level employee at the White House, as a humidor. John Edwards, who called his mistress, who was pregnant by him, a slut when he found out she was pregnant and then denied it. Right? Why do Democrats love this? I mean, and I just mentioned three things. Now you're going to mention Republicans. You can't name any of them that are as awful as these three. Let's throw in Wiener as well. What is it with Democrats? What is the fascination and love and lionizing? Bill Clinton's still a hero in the Democrat Party, even after what he did to Monica Lewinsky. Why is that, Garland?
So, yeah, I could go to Mark Foley with the 16-year-old pages. I could go to, you know, Larry Craig.
He's
in the
not
airport.
A hero. Mark Foley was never at a Republican event again, and he never will be, right?
Right. I could go to Mark Sanford. But here's the bottom line. But here's what I would be doing. I would be saying,
what Mark Sanford did is nowhere close to what
because he used public funds to pay to finance his chicanery. But my point is this: I started saying this with Anthony Weiner. You know, I have friends on Capitol Hill, and quite a while back, before any of this happened, I had a friend of mine talk to me about, you know, who was there all the time, and he said, mentioned to Anthony Weiner, and he said, you know, I think he has some mental illness. Not I think he has some mental illness issues. The guy was in there one day and, you know, I don't know if you know, he kind of flipped out totally on the House floor one day. He's, you know, totally kind of, you know, went out in space on the House floor. But the guy knew him. And so the fact of the matter is, when I heard this about Weiner, I wasn't really shocked. It was one of those where I thought, And I think that the good thing about this is that he didn't engage in any contact anything with this woman, because the fact of the matter is, when we look at these kind of issues, the kids
like
are
Bill
the,
Clinton
the
did you mean
are the ultimately
you
the,
mean like Bill Clinton
exactly like Bill Clinton you know like Herman you Cain like, and his women Gingrich and his women
Bill Clinton
John
is still
and his staff
Bill,
affair,
Bill Clinton's
Jack
I don't,
Ryan
did you hear that David, Bill Clinton's wife was actually running for president just a few months ago? I don't know if you heard about that part, and that Bill Clinton is still considered a revered elder statesman.
Well, you know, here's one of the
let's
things.
Go over that humidor thing
things,
again, shall
always,
we
I've always believed this. One of the reasons that porn and gay porn are watched the most in southern states, in the red states, is because nothing makes a tree grow like pruning it. Don't forget that. Nothing makes a tree. Sexual repression is going to always create this.
I think that's too much information, but we're out of time in round one. In round two, Donald Trump is about to go on his first foreign trip in the midst of a hectic week. We'll be back to discuss it next on Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Lines.
Welcome to round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. And look, you can go, if you want to check us out, you want to check this out live, just go to the Sputnik News Facebook page, and we're on Facebook Live, and it's going to be up on Facebook Live afterwards, so you can check it out for quite a long period of time. Additionally, if you want to get in touch with Lee, if you want to follow him, at Stranahan on Twitter. I'm at Garland Nixon. That's the great thing about having a name like Garland Nixon. It's always easy to get. You know, if you look for an email address, garlandnixon@gmail.com, they're always there. There's nobody else named Garland Nixon. But at any rate, so we're on Facebook Live. And as I said, the video's up afterwards. So, you know, just when I think Donald Trump may do something that I approve of, that I think is a good idea, he goes and screws it up. So what's going on now? So Donald Trump's he's arriving in Riyadh this week, and he's going to lay out his new vision for regional security architecture that they're referring to as kind of an Arab NATO, right? And as you know, there's a whole lot of billionaires in his cabinet, and this may shock you, but a signature part of this deal is going to be arms sales to a Saudi Arabia that's going to be about $128 billion in arms sales, and over 10 years could reach $350 billion. I knew the oligarchs would. If it's Donald Trump, I knew the oligarchs are somewhere in here. They're going to get theirs. Now, let me tell you why I think this is a bad move, and I'll give Lee a shot here. The problem is this. You got to understand the thousands of years of ethnic strife in this area and what it's all about, right? There are two groups that have been at each other's throats. People say, you know, call everybody in the Middle East, the Arabs, Arabs. Ah, you got the Arabs and the Persians, the Sunnis and the Shiites. The real strife is Sunni-Shiite. The real kind of battles and war have been Sunni-Shiite. So the plan for this is to put together this Arab, which are the Saudis, I think Egyptians, Jordan, and maybe in a, I forgot, I got it somewhere else, UAB, United Arab Emirates. And they're going to put together this semi, this, you know, kind of like version of an Arab NATO, and then they're going to go after ISIS. Now, here's the issue here. Let's start here. ISIS gets their funding, and these kind of the extreme Wahhabist, you know, version of Islam, the extremists, the extreme Wahhabists, they get their funding from the Saudis. So the Saudis are going to go after them, but yet they are funded by the Saudis. That ain't going to work. But ultimately, here's what you have to understand is the real deal here, Lee. And I'm going to stop here and leave it to you.
I understand what the real deal is.
Here's what the real deal is, what this is going to happen. If you create this, what the Saudis and what the Shiites here are looking at is, give us money. Excuse me, what the Sunni element here is looking at is, give us money to fight the Shiites. And once they get that money, they will marshal their forces against the Shiites, and we could be looking at a disastrous regional war. We're going to pour all of these weapons, pour billions, hundreds of billions of dollars of weapons into this region and arm all these Sunnis. And let's not forget, the Saudis are the ones who fund, and if we give them all these... I may be going too far. I'm going to leave this to you, Lee, because here's what I think. These arms are going to end up in the hands of ISIS because they get all their money from the Saudis. Don't believe they're not going to get some of these arms. Maybe I'm wrong. You got it, Lee.
Well, okay. So what the media should be doing on this is educating people enough so they understand what's going on in the Middle East. But I would say most Americans who watch hours and hours of news don't actually understand the Sunni Shia.
How about this? Because they don't actually see any news.
Well, they don't see news. That's exactly right. So I'm just briefly, not to go into a history of Islam, but briefly, the Sunni Shia conflict goes back to very soon, right after the death of Muhammad, essentially, where after Muhammad, the prophet who started Islam, right? Everyone agrees on that part. This is where the disagreements start. It was a question of ascension. In other words, who would follow Muhammad? Okay. And without getting into the weeds of it, the Sunnis believe one thing, Shias believe another. That's what it comes down
exactly.
to. So in other words, this is,
and they don't get along so good.
This is a conflict, in other words, that is literally as old as Islam itself. It is not new. There's new aspects to it, but it's not new. It goes back literally to right after the death of Muhammad. So first off, it's not something that's going to be solved. I'm just,
you think?
It's just not going to be solved easily. It hasn't been solved.
You don't think this Trump like tour to Riyadh and stuff is going to end it all after, you
well,
know,
and the other thing
1300
people,
years.
The other thing people need to realize is that the Shia is a minority.
Mm-hmm.
There's more Sunnis. And there's more Sunnis even in countries that are run by Shiites, such as
Syria. And Iran.
Right. There's more
Sunnis no longer run. They were run by Sunnis until we overthrew it, and then the Shiites.
That's right. So there's more Sunnis in Syria, for instance, than there have been. And
which
by
is
the
another
way,
source of conflict.
It is a source of conflict.
Minority-run countries.
Yes, and it's one of the reasons, for instance, that Christians were better off under Assad than they would be under a Sunni regime, because, practically speaking, Assad's an Alawite type of Shia Muslim. Okay. And so, and there's a lot of bitterness about the Alawites, and they took positions that were higher in the military and stuff like that. So there's a lot of bitterness. The thing that's helped keep it is a coalition with Christians. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In other
yeah.
words, because Assad is an Alawite, he's had to form coalitions, and that kept Christians safer. So Christians said they were better off there. And now what we're seeing, these groups, as you point out, that are Saudi-backed, and why is that? Because Wahhabism literally comes from the 1700s in Saudi Arabia, where a prince from the House of Saud who married into the Wahhab family in the 1700s. So again, this is a deep thing
it's
as
Saudi.
Well.
It's in the Saudi culture. It's in the DNA of the Saudi culture.
That's right. So again, this is not stuff. Now again, what I just explained isn't really hard to understand. And I did it in just a minute or two without the use of pictures, diagrams, or interpretive dance. Right. Although I could have done that and would have been awesome.
And since we're on Facebook Live, we're going to have to give it a shot one day. We'll like wear all white and, you know,
it's Friday, but it's not that Friday yet. It's not Friday o'clock yet. So, and I don't drink anyway, but if I did, I'd have some sangria, but I can't because it's got sugar in it and I'm diabetic, but I digress. But the point here is this is a deep conflict. Now, here's what's going to happen. Now I've talked about history. Let me predict what's going to happen. And this is what you need to watch out for.
Can I narrow it down to two words? Something bad.
No, I don't know if it's going to be something bad, but this is what I want people to watch for. President Trump is going to be giving a speech. He's going first to Saudi Arabia. And what's happening in Saudi Arabia that we know is going to happen is a big arms deal. Major arms deal. Now, again, the media is not talking much about that. Because, by the way, big arms deals are good for business for everybody, right? Now,
except the people that have all these arms in their area and people tempted to use it.
Well, when I say
the Saudis haven't exactly been the greatest steward of arms, if you pay attention to what they've been doing in Yemen lately.
When I say good for
lately.
Everybody, I really mean the Democrat and the Republican elitists. Right. That's what I mean.
Good
right?
for the good for the people over here that are making money. Real bad
the military
for the people
industrial
like in Yemen
complex.
Who are getting bombed to crap.
Yeah. Now what they say is going to happen, though, and let's be super clear on this. The White House said today that President Trump will be giving an inspirational speech where he's going to speak openly and bluntly and honestly about the dangers of terrorism. By the way, I believe that will happen. But I believe here's the way the speech is going to go if you listen for it. Now, again, this is a prediction. I don't have any inside knowledge. But here's a prediction. The speech will basically say, like, there is a big threat with this. I'm not trying to do this in a speechy way, but basically it'll be like, look, there's a threat from radical Islamic terrorism, but Islam is one of the great religions of the world, along with Christianity and Judaism, kumbaya. And in order to fight ISIS, we need a group of nations from Saudi Arabia with boots on the ground, because the last thing we need is to send American boots on the ground or foreign countries. Right. And so far, if you're a Trump supporter, you're kind of like, well, yeah, okay, that sounds okay. What they're really going to be pitching is what you talked about, which is this Arab or this Muslim NATO.
Right.
And by the way, and that means big arms deals. Yeah. I mean, that means you get a certificate.
and there are a couple things going on here. Number one, you're going to load the Saudis up. The Saudis, as I've said, have not been the best steward of arms. If you look at what they've been doing in Yemen, they just, you know, you give them a bunch of arms and they just drop them willy-nilly wherever and, you know, civilians are blown to smithereens. That being said, putting all of these arms in that, you know, a volatile region, it's like, what are we going to do? There's a bunch of people standing around there and they all hate each other's guts. I know, let's hand them a handful of hand grenades. What could possibly go wrong there? That's the way I see this. And, you know, most everything that Donald Trump believes is antithetical to everything I believe. However, I am a person that believes in saying when you say something I agree with, I'm going to tell you. So I have supported Donald Trump's policy of bilateral agreements in, say, Syria, of working with the Iranians and the Russians and the Turks and all of these people together to come up with some plan for whatever it is, what safe zones or whatever.
It's certainly quicker.
Yeah. Well, I oppose, and even though that little incident with throwing some Tomahawk missiles at Syria, other than that, I think he's been reasonable in that he hasn't pursued the neocon agenda of regime change, and they've backed away from this Assad must go stuff for the most part. Okay. That being said, as I said at the beginning, when I thought the guy was, I said, okay, you know, I may not like much of anything you're doing, but that's okay. That's good. Beats the heck out of neocons, right? And now you come back to me and you're going to blow it all up because what you're doing is going to be destructive. When you know, particularly if you think about Saudi Arabia, as we say, Here's a country that funds. See, here's my opinion of Saudi Arabia and why the Saudi government, you know, you look at all the overthrow with all these governments and Arab Spring and all that kind of stuff. In my opinion, in my interpretation of what's going on in Saudi Arabia, the Saudi royal family has kind of an agreement with the more extreme, with the extremists that are basically saying, we'll leave you alone. We'll kind of let you fund terrorism, do all the things that aren't so thrilled, and you won't turn on us and try to toss us out of office. And it works for them. The only problem is it doesn't work for people around the world who are attacked by the terrorism that money is eventually funneled to. Now you're going to have all these arms. Who knows who can get their hands on these arms, whatever types of arms they are. They can fall into the wrong hands. Right now, fighting ISIS in Syria, a lot of them are using, guess what, American weapons that were left from the Iraq War. So I think we can look at another circumstance. Look, we armed bin Laden and the Mujahideen, the spirit fighters. And what did they do? They turned on us eventually. Every time we go to the Middle East and we arm a bunch of people in this volatile region, we end up getting those arms fired back at us or some of our allies. And I would suspect, you know what, if something happens consistently over and over again, I'm going to suspect that this is probably that, you know, consistency is a safe bet, number one. And number two, man, if we, let's say, okay, so we arm these people, the Saudis, et cetera, and it gets to a point that these people just finally decide they're going to move on Iran. We have a true mess. We have our kind of World War III in the region. Not only that, what if somebody decides that Israel can be drawn into it? Somebody decides they want to draw Israel into it by firing on them, and they're the Saudis' kind of tenuous little relationship with Israel is challenged. We are creating a mess, and I think that it is the worst thing we could possibly do is to generate, to put more firepower in the Middle East and create a new, basically a Sunni coalition, a Sunni war coalition. Bad move, I think. I think we should be moving towards diplomatic and bilateral solutions.
Well, here's the other problem Trump's got. So he's not just going to Saudi Arabia. He's starting there, but then eventually he's going to go to Israel. And by the way, we'll skip the last part of the trip until next week, which is he's going to be doing a speech of the G20 countries, too. So this is not just a Middle Eastern trip, although...
And there's a lot of discussion about the embassy, and that's a big issue,
That's a big issue, and let's talk about Israel in a second, but I also want to point out...
I think that's a whole other subject, because the Palestinians are doing some different things. They're saying, you know, they're saying settlements are part. But as I said, let's go do finish what we're doing. We can do some good, great segment. Well, listen, let everybody know. Don't forget, we're on Facebook Live. You can check us out. If you miss it, download the Sputnik app, and you can go to Fault Lines there. You can listen to us live on the Sputnik News app, or you can go to Facebook Live. You can see it live. You can actually share this show when it's going on or after it's over with your friends on Facebook.
Now, so here's the issue Trump's got going to Israel as well, and it relates to the fact that he's starting in Saudi Arabia. And by the way, it's interesting that Trump, he's the first president to make their first foreign trip to the Middle East. As big a hotspot as Middle East has been for decades, he's the first president to make his first foreign trip there. Usually people start off with like training wheels.
You're right.
Let's visit Canada.
Yeah.
Something like that. He's going big.
Belize. You know, let's talk about the
Israel problem. So Trump's popularity just sank. Right now, 56% of Israelis, only 56%, and that's lower than it should be, think that he is more pro-Israel than pro-Palestine. That number, depending upon what happens with this Arab NATO thing, could be even lower by the time he gets to Israel. Now, also it was interesting, as I say, I was in the White House this week. I was there for the McMaster press briefing and then for the off-camera that Spicer did that afternoon. This is 2 days ago. McMaster was asked and Spicer was asked. They said, we heard that Donald Trump will be visiting the West Wall in Jerusalem. Reporters ask, do you think that the West Wall is part of Israel? And McMaster punted. He punted. Then Spicer was asked the question in the off camera and Spicer punted. He did not want to answer that. And McMaster said, and I heard this because the woman asking was standing right next to me, who asked the question about the West Wall. She was standing right next to me, which meant that I was on camera and I looked fabulous, by the way. But she's the one who asked about the West Wall. And it was interesting to me that they punted on the question. if I were an Israeli, I'd be like, aye, huh, maybe this is not. And it's interesting, especially as pro-Israel as we know Jared Kushner is, for example, that they did not want to take a more definitive position on the West Wall or Jerusalem. Trump had been pretty bold about this in the past. And suddenly it's like, well, can we change the subject? Let's talk about something more fun, like the accusations that Trump leaked information to Russia. Let's talk about something more fun. And that's what they did.
And I think there's an understanding there, and that is they're starting to understand that, you know, when you're in that position, you know, everybody's kind of waiting with bated breath for every little word that you say to interpret it very, very broadly. And I think they realize at this point, you know, you're better off when you're in that position not saying anything and not giving people things to interpret, because
it seems so wimpy. It's just so wimpy, though.
A lot of times people lock you into a policy based on what you said, and you want to leave some room.
Yeah, but you know what? I got to say this.
Trump administration needs a lot of room because I don't think he knows what he's going to do half the time.
As a Trump supporter, that's not what I want to hear. As a Trump supporter, look.
He's got to ask Jared Kushner so he can figure out what to do.
So that's what bothers me. I'm realistic about Israel. In other words, I'm not like head over heels goofy over him. But I do think Israel is clearly our strongest ally in the region. I think it's who we've got the most in common with culturally. But I also don't think we should give away the world to them. I think they're just an ally. We're not Israel, in other words. So, I don't know.
I'm pro-Israel in that I think peace is the best move for Israel. So, how's that? That's my kind of pro-Israel. Okay, we'll be right back. We got another segment coming up. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Lines.
We are back with round three, the final round of this week's series of episodes of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, the last episode before the weekend. And what better to set for the weekend than to talk about immigration enforcement? What's more fun? The only time this would have been better to do this was Cinco de Mayo. That's the only time I would have preferred to do this, actually. But let's do it now. So, Garland, progressives like you, Democrats, I'll call you a Democrat. What the heck? You're a Democrat, right?
Yes, I am. Marginally. Okay. But yes, I have not left the Democratic Party, but I identify myself as a progressive.
Okay. Well, but you're a Democrat.
Can we just agree there are various strains of Democrat?
There's
like two big groups, mainly.
It's okay. You're a Democrat. So let's talk about what Democrats love to do is pretend that Donald Trump doesn't have any accomplishments so far. Let's talk about accomplishments. Well, I've heard you do it, Garland.
How about we just say this? Nothing good. No. I did praise him on bilateral agreements in Syria, working with Turkish government. Everything else is bad, but he did one thing.
Let me talk about an accomplishment. ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, not vanilla ICE. I need to characterize that. Not the artist behind Ice Baby. Different ICE. ICE recently released statistics and said the amount, now this is an accomplishment for the Trump administration. The number of suspected illegal immigrants arrested has gone up almost 38%, 37.6%, which again, I don't know math, but that's almost 38%, I believe, since the same time last year. Now, the reason this number has gone up, I'm going to tell you why. Simple. They tried. The difference between this administration and the Obama administration is the Obama administration, frankly, was not that interested in busting illegal aliens.
Oh, you better check your numbers, buddy.
I am checking the numbers. Let me go over the numbers again.
Any country, anyone before.
The number of arrests has gone up 37.6% compared to the same time last year. That's the numbers.
So he wants to surpass Obama. That was one of the issues that the left had with Obama because he actually deported more people than any president before him.
Only because of the way they fudged the numbers.
But it was true. We had big problems with
right.
With,
Do you
with
know
president,
why? Because the number of illegal people. Are you saying, let me ask you this, Garland, are you suggesting somehow that the number of illegal people entering the country went down under Obama? Or is it possible when you're saying, here's the thing, when you create a situation that more illegal people are streaming into the country by saying, for instance, on this DACA thing, well, we're going to pass an executive order and call people dreamers. Dreamers. It's so nice. You can't call them illegal aliens. They're dreamers. The dreamers. Right? The numbers went up. Therefore, he had to deport more people. But as a percentage of the numbers go up? No. And I'm going to say it again. Numbers already. This is a major accomplishment for Trump. If you're a Trump supporter, and by the way, this is why the mainstream media is not talking about this. The media does not want you to know Donald Trump's accomplished something, which is he said he'd be tougher on immigration enforcement. He's been tougher on immigration enforcement. The numbers prove it, right? And not only that, but over 70% of the people who were deported were criminals. Now, by the way, that's a big deal because there were a lot of criminal legal aliens. And if you're going to say anybody who's here illegally is a criminal, yes, yes, I know. But I mean, committed other crimes other than entering the country illegally. But the thing that was awesome about this is ICE came out and said that no one is safe. If you're here illegally, you're not safe. Nobody is safe. So even though the number of criminals went up, the number of people in other categories went up as well. And that's awesome. This is a major, this is, I mean, you got to admit, this is Donald Trump delivering on a campaign promise early in his administration. We're not even to June yet.
A couple of things here. Number one, to me, that's an accomplishment in the same way that like a serial killer who says, I was killing five people a month and hey, I'm up to seven. That is theoretically accomplishment, but it's not an accomplishment for the betterment of society. A couple of things
American society.
I got to say this. So there has long been a discussion about the repercussions, about the issues relative to undocumented workers, that there are a lot of various people who utilize undocumented workers for farm services, for lawn services, et cetera, like that, for people where they can't get Americans to work that are going to have a difficult time. We shall soon know whether or not those of us who said this is going to be a problem, we'll find out whether or not it's going to be a problem. But I don't agree with it. I don't think it should be happening, but he's the president. He won and he can do what he wants. I don't agree with it. I don't like it, but I'm not one to say he can't do it. He can do it.
I'm a little confused by something.
Let me add this. A couple of things. Number one, this whole concept that he's getting rid of criminals. First of all, there are a lot of people, you know what their crime is? Their crime is they've been charged with this. A lot of people that have been deported, they've been charged, and this happened under President Obama also. But to pretend that that we're getting, you know, the hillside strangler here, when a lot of these people are charged with
rape,
working under with an illegal Social Security number,
which is illegal,
right? So, but to pretend that we're getting
identity,
hillside strangler,
identity fraud,
so this
is okay with you,
which also brings in this. So these are people who are pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into Social Security, and they're not hundreds of billions, literally, into Social Security, and are not getting a dime. I would ask this: if people who don't believe me go, well, I can't prove it to you now. Go online and Google it and do the search for yourself. But the fact of the matter is, I don't agree with it. I think we're breaking up families. I think we're doing things that are bad, that's not good for humanity, that we got people who are born in America at 6 months or brought in at 6 months, at 2 years, at 3 years old, and we're going to say you got to go back to a country that you've never been to, that you know nothing about, that you don't speak the language. I don't think it's the right thing to do. I don't think it's the moral thing to do. Certainly, there are a lot of Trump supporters that are in favor of it for various reasons. Some I understand. Some I'm not so crazy about. But whatever the reason, I'm not going to pretend that he doesn't have the right to do this. The other question is, we will see what the ramifications of this in 2018 and 2020, how this is going to affect things at the polls, whether or not there are a lot of people who are going to look at their community and say, you know, I don't like what's happening. I don't, there may very well be, if the Democrats can get anything together, can get it together and do things right. But there are a lot of things that happen, such as one of the issues that because we have so many undocumented, we have a lot of people. What we're having seeing now is the numbers of reported domestic violence, the numbers of reported crimes. One of the issues, Daryl Gates, that, you know, paragon of progressivism, the former LAPD chief, said that it wasn't, that going after the undocumented wasn't good because it was bad for our society. And I agree with him, because now people will not come forward when they see a crime or a murder. They won't come forward and participate in things that we need them to participate in to make our society safer. They won't go get a driver's license. Instead, they're driving with no driver's license.
No, they should
leave.
Get
hit with a
they should leave the country.
They
don't want them.
In the
you don't
country.
Understand.
They
I don't want them driving because I don't want them
but
here.
They ain't leaving.
What?
So now,
no, yes,
when you get hit with
30,
a person,
in fact, 38% more when
you
are
get,
leaving.
When you get hit by a person who doesn't have a driver's license, now you have a big problem.
Right. The problem wasn't that they didn't have a driver's license. The problem is they shouldn't have been in the country in the first place. And so first off, let's just go over something, because I heard you use the term undocumented. Can you explain why these people aren't, did they lose their documents? Why don't they have those documents? Can you tell me?
They don't have documents.
Well, why not, though? Where did they go? Where did their documents go? For instance, I have a key.
They never had. Look,
let's not be facetious. For instance, let me just give an example.
We know they're undocumented because they never had documents.
I went for a walk last night, and I have a key card for my office, and I lost the key card. It fell out. I have a little wallet in the back of my phone, and it fell out. So are you suggesting these people without documents, like they had the documents, and they lost them?
No, I'm not suggesting that at all.
Well, then why don't they have them?
I'm describing them as undocumented.
I know this should be so easy.
I know.
There's an easy answer here.
They're big into like words like, you know.
Illegal. That would be a good one.
Islamic terrorist.
That's a good one, too.
Abracadabra, alakazam.
No.
I'm turning you into a rabbit, and it's all about words to you.
Let's go over it again. Where did their documents go? I'm trying to help them. Perhaps they're under a cushion or something like that.
Are you saying they're not undocumented immigrants?
Oh, no. I'm saying they're undocumented, but I'm saying...
Well, then we're in a... Aha! You agreed with me that they're undocumented.
No, I do.
So then it's settled.
But
they're undocumented.
Because they're illegal, because they came here illegally.
But we just
they broke
agreed
the
that
law.
They're undocumented. We just
what?
Came to a oneness that... I said, you're undocumented. You said yes.
Right. But I'm saying the word
there
illegal...
There we go. You agreed again.
A word you can't say.
I can. I choose not to.
Okay. There we go.
Because they're undocumented.
There
we
go.
I don't have to say anything else. There's no such thing as an illegal person.
Yes, there is.
No, there isn't.
What do you mean there's no such thing as an illegal person?
Human being.
It's a person.
It's a person who is undocumented.
So what do you, is there such a, how were you in law enforcement, Garland?
I was pretty
are
good.
You aware,
with,
are
I
you
was
aware that like
good,
illegal,
man.
So what is illegal then? Is it like a mist that floats around and sort of like you sort of can get some illegal on you? What is illegal then?
It's a description. You conservatives choose to say that one thing,
no.
And I choose to say another.
No.
You know, and you can, whatever, you know, one person.
So I don't know.
Wait a minute. One person is shell-shocked. The next guy has post-traumatic stress disorder. It just depends. They both came out of a military conflict and they're freaked out.
This is the progressive delusion. Which is, if you were, I'm not saying you
it's
ever
a delusion.
Did this.
You just
it's
agreed
absolutely
with me.
A delusion.
You just agreed
so
that they're undocumented.
So let's say I get pulled over. I'm driving 120 miles an hour in a school zone, and I get pulled over by a cop, and I say, well, I'm not an illegal person, technically. I'm just like, there's no illegal people. I am just fast. Why are you tormenting me? Because I am fast. I am consider myself a fast-moving American. I'm not illegal. No, you're illegal. You're going 120 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone.
So I give you a ticket because you don't have a license and never had a license. I give you a ticket because you're an unlicensed driver. I don't give you a ticket and say you're an illegal driver. I could say you're an illegal driver.
You're driving
but
illegally.
I'm most likely going to say you're
watch
an unlicensed driver because that's because
watch
as
this,
we
ready?
As we agreed.
I'm going to do it. Here I
as
go.
As we agreed, you're an
I'm going to pretend to be a cop here. I'll do it as Clint Eastwood. Sir. Do you realize you're driving illegally? Like that was a bad. It was a little Reagan-esque. I'm gonna be honest
you
with
got
you.
Me, you.
Not
got,
my best Eastwood.
You got me, officer. I'm an unlicensed driver.
Okay, but he said. But if you argue with the cop and continue to go, well, I'm not illegal. Yes, you are. You're driving illegally, sir. No, but I'm unlicensed. But
ticket,
I'm not
but I'm
illegal.
Still unlicensed.
This comes down
we
to the progressive
the
thing.
Same thing.
Right, I get it. You don't want to hurt the illegal's feelings.
You know, you guys
I, no,
don't
no, I get
give,
it, Garland.
You don't want to respect our right to use the English language as we choose.
Right,
and that's the
English. The English language calls them illegal.
You got to control the
aliens.
Premise.
That's what the term is,
dude. We're progressive.
The term's illegal aliens. I know you are.
What you understand is progressives. We reject control, dude. If you try to, we're like a spring. We're like a jack
you
in the box.
You love big government.
You try
what
to
do you mean you
when
reject
you try,
control?
What happens when you push that jack down? Pow, he's going to pop up. Progressive,
what do you,
you
mean
try
you
control
reject
us.
Control? You cannot, you're
you
not
try
a
to tell us what we can say, and we're going to be like, no.
Yeah,
and you know
okay.
what? If you don't like undocumented immigrants, we'll come up with another term that we like even better, and we'll make sure you hate it.
Are
How's
you,
that?
Garland, I have a 15-year-old. Are you a Are you 15?
I wish I was.
Okay.
Give or take 40
okay.
years.
Okay. Okay, because you just sound like a petulant teenager right now.
No,
you don't,
I'm
you
not
don't
trying
want to, say,
to tell
well,
somebody else they
but
can't
let me,
use
let
the
go
terms
on,
that
let
they
me,
want
let
to
me
use.
Go on.
Because
let me hit you with
because
some.
I'm OCD
let me just hit you
because
with
you're
some
not
more
using
facts.
The terms I like.
Let me just hit you
I
with some
I was
more
the
facts.
OCD guy
because
here.
This sort of feeling thing also applies to the way people deal with policy. Under the Obama administration, the IRF chief said The agency was not alerting Americans when illegal migrants stole their Social Security numbers. This is the quote. Obviously, the priority for the taxpayers and the IRS is collecting those taxes. That's
oh,
what
how
it said.
Do you know? Look, they go online, they steal like 250,000
no,
Social
right.
Security
I'm
numbers
tell you, and,
at a time from
and,
like
no,
Kohl's and, or Visa or Citibank, whoever
anybody,
they're getting,
any,
and now you're
going to
say you
can
know.
Look this up, Drew. Anybody
know.
Can look this up.
That's absurd.
Let's talk about the money paid into the system. 6 million illegal aliens. 6 million were filing taxes, and most of them were getting refunds. I'm going to say that again. Most of them were getting refunds. Yeah, well,
that
you can,
doesn't make a lot of sense.
Oh, I know it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Oh,
I agree with you there.
Wait a minute.
We're in agreement. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
A minute ago, you said illegal aliens were stealing people's Social Security numbers.
Right.
Now,
that's
there
right.
are there is
that's
no
right.
way. There are like
Why?
Hundreds of thousands at a time are stolen online, right, by these hackers, and they sell them all over the place. So how are you going to know? These out of the 100,000 that was stolen from Citigroup or Visa, whoever was hacked, now these particular 15 went to undocumented immigrants. Not really, Lee.
But they're not undocumented immigrants, Garland. They're illegal aliens.
It all depends on who's saying it.
If I steal your car, and
oh,
I'm,
God, we're am going
I,
back here
if
again.
I steal your car, am I an, like, am I a borrower?
As
what,
long
am,
as
I,
the,
what am I?
As long as the First Amendment exists, you can be whatever I call you.
No.
Yes, you
oh,
can.
My God.
You can be what I
this
call you.
This is why,
so,
no wonder you guys,
you guys
love Noam Chomsky.
You
no wonder you guys love the linguist.
Don't respect the individual's, the individual, love that word, the individual's right to portray the world as he interprets it, or
this
she
is,
interprets
this
it.
Is why the left worships people like Noam Chomsky, who's a philosopher, who's a linguist. And by the way, when I say a linguist, this is not a callback to Bill Clinton. Stop that. Saul, get that out of your head. Stop it. I'm not saying that. He's chuckling in there. It's wrong of you to do that. Here's my point. The linguist reference had nothing to do with Clinton. Chomsky's a guy who literally believes, well, words are whatever you want them to be. If you want the word illegal alien to be changed to, we know why you change language. This is the thing. The jig is up on this one. Conservatives know why liberals do this. The reason you know why
and we know why you guys do it.
No,
so why
we,
are we pretending otherwise?
We do it because that's the term under the law. Illegal alien is a term under the law. It's progressives who changed it to undocumented.
Are you writing out a, wait a minute. Are you writing out a charging document? Or are we having
yes.
a concern? You're not writing
yes.
out a charging document.
Yes, I am.
Written, if you write a charging,
38%
more
charging,
documents
this year under Trump.
If you write
out
a charging document, there are specific terms you need to use. I've written out a charging document. The court wants particular things. We ain't writing a charging document. We're having a conversation on talk radio, which means I can call them red balloons if I want to. Why should it bother someone else? Because now,
well, do me a favor, do that. For the rest of the conversation, call them red balloons. That's fine.
Put it this way.
You do that.
Conservatives want to use an attacking kind of language where these guys are illegal aliens.
That sounds bad,
man.
What I want you to do.
Oh, my God, illegal aliens are coming to get us. They are evil people as opposed to undocumented.
Keep using the term red balloons for the rest of the conversation, and your insanity on this subject will be here. But the fact is, illegal aliens are getting tax refunds. Millions and millions and millions of dollars in tax refunds. Now, it is an outrageous story that as soon as Americans hear it, it's completely documented.
Millionaires aren't getting tax refunds because they don't pay any taxes.
No, because they actually...
General Electric ain't getting any because they don't pay any.
Because they actually...
Corporations? That doesn't bother you, though. I forgot. You're conservative.
Right, because we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world
and
right
the corporations
now.
End up paying zero? General Electric pays zero? That's a high corporate tax rate.
We have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. Thank God. One good thing. Another, since we're talking about Trump accomplishments, another one is to bring it down to a reasonable level. Now,
those poor wait a minute, Lee. Let me get this straight. So the problem is we got to go after the poor guy who's picking grapes.
Have you ever
had
an
hour?
Have you ever run
a
business?
The poor guy who's picking grapes for a dollar an hour.
The poor
guy. He's the guy.
Oh, he's not picking grapes for a dollar an hour.
He's the guy who's destroying our economy. Now, the billionaire oligarch, well, that guy, I mean, he's making things work. He's the guy, not the guy who's making the rules. He ain't the problem. The guy who's suffering at the hands of the rule at the very bottom, who has no political and economic power. That's who conservatives want to come down on. Now, if I say, hey, you know, what about these oligarchs? You think maybe we ought to do something? You guys are protecting them like a Rottweiler would protect a, you know, would
yeah, see, here's the thing, Garland.
Protect his master.
You have no problem with the worker taking the money illegally. You have a problem with the guy paying.
If you were, a worker, it can't be illegal. You earned
yes,
it.
Yes, it can.
You earned it.
No. It's illegal to work. I could not go to a foreign country and work as a talk show. I could not just go to England and, well, I'm working as a talk show host now.
But they wouldn't like the way you talk. I mean, let's face it, you kind of like real American-y kind of thing.
Well, I know. No, it would go over very well. In fact, I've thought about doing that. I think I'd be a hit in England. I really do.
You should give Saudi Arabia a chance. See how that works. No, wait a minute. They'd cut your head off.
The problem
is, day one, dude, you are the head. You are Ichabod Crane.
I'm going to be honest. I think the birds would fancy me. There we go. Thanks very much. Hey, listen, it was going so well, Garland. I thought we would turn you around on the subject of immigration, but we weren't able to do it again. Great week of shows. Please tell your friends to tune into the show. Once again, you've been listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.